I Hate the News is the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I am Sunil Dasgupta. The week of November 12th, 2024. It's been a week since Donald Trump and the Republican Party swept to power, and the nation, but particularly the federally dependent state of Maryland, is holding its breath with what's to come. On the other side, not surprisingly, Democrats are engaged in figuring out what went wrong, sometimes brutally. We will have final results and analysis, some national, but mostly local races, ballot questions, and school board. Talk about election fraud has largely evaporated now, but we bring you the curious case of mislabeling as election fraud the very legal act of non-citizen voting in Washington, D.C. and more. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by the Political Science Program at UMBC Shady Grove, where you'll learn a strong foundation in public policy, pre-law, and international affairs for an impactful career in a number of essential areas. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now.
When I fall down, I will stay down.
Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band for the moment spanning red, blue, and purple states, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam LeGrone on bass and synths, Ben Heath, guitar and synths, and Montgomery County's very own Planning Board Commissioner, James Hedrick, on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and available on Bandcamp. Sting Pain Index, because we are all feeling it. The only seemingly close big race in the state of Maryland was Congressional District 6, which covers the top half of Montgomery County, Frederick County, and extends all the way to the western Maryland counties, Washington, Allegheny, and Garrett. Republican Neil Parrott won Election Day and early voting, but was swamped by the mail-in votes in favor of Democrat April Delaney. On election night and the following days, Delaney was ahead by barely a few hundred votes, and the result looked really close. But once the mail-in ballots began to come in, she ended with a comfortable 4% lead, narrower than what Delaney's predecessor, David Trone, had won in 2022, but still impressive in the face of the red wave in the second reddest congressional district in the state of Maryland. Maryland Governor Wes Moore held an all-agency meeting, after which he spoke about the years ahead. On the one hand, he said, "We are ready to work with the incoming administration." On the other, he also said, "We are ready to push back on this new White House when necessary." The Biden administration had promised to pay to rebuild the Key Bridge in Baltimore. Will that money still be forthcoming? The federal government had announced that the new FBI headquarters would be located in Greenbelt in Prince George's County. Will that project be forthcoming? Maryland's largest employer is the federal government. 140,000 federal workers live here, 70,000 of them in Montgomery County alone. And Trump has said that he will cut the size of the federal government. National election results eclipsed local races, so here it goes. In Montgomery County, voters removed two sitting school board members running for re-election, Lynn Harris and Shebra Evans, and rejected a third candidate, Brenda Diaz, who avowed Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s anti-vaccination views. The result was a sweep for the Apple ballot. The teachers' union recommended candidates, Rita Montoya, Laura Stewart, and Natalie Zimmerman. Here is the teachers' union president, David Stein, reading out the consequences to the Board of Education.
Hello, President Silvestri, Dr. Taylor, and the Board of Education. In Tuesday's general election, Montgomery County voters made their voices clear in several important ways. First, voters emphatically said it is time for a change in MCPS's elected leadership. These past few years have been traumatic for our members, the district, and the community. They've been marred by scandal, misdirected priorities, obfuscation, and a lack of communication. I think we've been making fundamental changes to address these, but we expect the new board to be a vanguard of these changes. Secondly, Montgomery County voters clearly value and respect the views of educators in a way, quite frankly, that this board and district administration have not always done. We are the ones closest to the work. We are the ones who see the problems vividly and immediately. When educators tell you through climate surveys or otherwise that there are morale issues in certain workplaces, when we tell you that there are problems with the curriculum and services that we are delivering to students, when we tell you we don't have enough time and we don't have enough control over the time we do have, when we tell you our physical environments are unhealthy and unsafe, you need to listen. And then you need to act, because listening is not enough. And work with us to develop solutions, even when those solutions are hard and expensive. On Tuesday, voters listened to us, and I hope you're listening to us now. Lastly, it is clear we are entering a national environment that will be dark and perilous. Public education and its champions will be under more intense scrutiny and attack. Our detractors will target our most vulnerable students. This includes our LGBT students, immigrant, black and brown students, among others. We must come together to defend public education, our students, and our values. To do that, we must work together and find common ground. The voters agreed. On Tuesday, they also rejected taking a path towards less tolerance and less inclusivity in our schools. MCEA is committed to doing this work day in and day out. We may not see eye to eye on every issue, but I know that each of you believes in the power, promise, and potential of public education. I know we can find ways to work together to build and invest in our public education system that will not only endure, but will light up this dark time.
This election cycle was the first time that the Maryland Democratic Party weighed in on school board races across the state to counter the influence of right-wing groups like Moms for Liberty and Project 1776, and came up with middling success. Out of the 24 candidates the party targeted, 16 won their seats. Mostly these were school board seats in red counties, Washington, Allegheny, Talbot, Calvert, and Carroll. Frederick and Anne Arundel, which tend to be blue now, elected 2 and 1 respectively. If you thought all of this was a harmless game, in Calvert County, the sheriff's office on November 8th investigated a home in Dunkirk, Maryland, following complaints that a human body figure had been hung up from a tree by a rope. The owner said it was a Halloween decoration, though it was more than a week after Halloween, and no other decoration was still up. The sheriff's department said the neighbors corroborated the story and have closed the case. Calvert and Harford County NAACP branches showed the picture of the hanging human figure on their Facebook pages, which they have now removed. And State Delegate Jeffrey Long Jr. has said in a Facebook post that the house displaying the human figure hanging was across the street from the home of Calvert County's first black superintendent of school, Andre Townsall. Calvert County elected all 3 school board members that the Maryland Democratic Party had targeted. Melissa Goshorn, one of the 3, had a petition 2 years ago to stop the hiring of Townsall as superintendent. In Baltimore, a local ballot question, cutting the city council size to nearly half, failed. Here is Andy Ellis, who worked to defeat it.
Question H was a charter amendment in Baltimore City that was put on the ballot by a petition. It would have slashed the Baltimore City Council from 14 single-member districts to 8 single-member districts and decreased the overall size of the council 15 to 9. So that was on the ballot. It was there by petition, and the petition was sponsored by a ballot issue group called Peace Baltimore, and they were entirely funded by David Smith, who is the executive director of Sinclair Broadcasting and the owner of The Sun, who used, you know, the loopholes and campaign financing around ballot issues to put $415,000 behind this. So, it was going to be a pretty drastic change in our governance paid for by one wealthy person. And we were able to be part of a coalition that was able to defeat it. It was really exciting. We were happy to vote against and to get over 62% of the vote, almost 100,000 votes against. First one in Baltimore City to be defeated in 20 years and only the second one to be defeated in 25 years. I think 52 have passed in that time. So it was a good victory. We're excited about it.
There was another question, question F, which was about the redevelopment of Harbor Place. That went through.
Yeah, so question F got put on by the council. 12 members of the council agreed, or everybody but one member of the council agreed to a bill that would have allowed residential towers inside of Harbor Place as part of a redevelopment project that was supported by the mayor and the governor.
Why is this controversial?
So it's controversial because, first of all, it's another development of the harbor, and there's a lot of people in Baltimore who think that too much taxpayer money has been spent developing the harbor and not the rest of the city. Second, the reason it was on the charter was because it needed to allow housing inside what was previously parkland around the harbor. So if you've been to the inner harbor, all of that area where the pavilions are and where you can walk around and be next to the water is parkland, according to the city charter. And it is prohibited from having residential in it. So they wanted to build two luxury high-rises inside of that parkland area, which is why they needed to put it on the ballot, because according to the charter, that was protected parkland, and they needed to change that. So people didn't like the idea that luxury towers were going to go up in a place that is currently publicly accessible.
So they couldn't have a compromise where they could build the homes and allow public access.
The developer, David Bramble, who is very connected to Brandon Scott and Wes Moore, said that he couldn't finance the project without the luxury high-rises.
Andy Ellis, thank you.
Thank you.
Montgomery County voters approved a ballot question limiting the county executive's term to 2, lowering it from 3, which will continue to apply to the county council. This will likely end the current county executive Mark Ulrich's political career 2 years from now. He has been in politics for 36 years, all the way from being on the Tacoma Park City Council to now being county executive. Voters love term limits, and opposition to ballot questions from the county Democratic Party seems not to have had any impact. 2/3 of county voters supported the term limit question. Statewide, Maryland passed a ballot question to enshrine reproductive rights and abortion in the state constitution. With a quick update from the County Board of Elections on what's going on is Gilberto Zelaya.
For those individuals that voted early, for those individuals who voted on election day, and all of those individuals who submitted their mail-in ballots and we have canvassed, it's a total of 331,000 out of our 683,000 registered voters for a percentage of about 48.5%. That number is going to keep on moving upwards because we have about, give and take, 50,000 outstanding mail-in ballots that the deadline to receive them as timely is Friday, the 15th of November, 11 a.m. So at 11 a.m. on the 15th of November, we will visit the post office, and any of those timely date stamped November 5th or before will be incorporated into the canvas. So that 48.5% hopefully will rise as we visit the post office on the last day. And every day we're visiting the post office and getting more trays of mail-in ballots. And we're also going through all of the submitted mail-in ballots collected at our 58 drop boxes, which have been picked up already and in storage right now at the state. So, congratulations, good work for our voters. We will continue to canvass. And then hopefully if all goes well, we'll initiate our provisional canvass on the 13th of November. So there's some time until we could frame that picture that we are painting right now.
You don't know how many provisional ballots are that you received, right?
No, we're finalizing our Election Day hand count. I can't share that it was a lot because what happens is a lot of voters who requested to vote by mail decided to show up in person. So there was a lot of code four, as we call them. So we had a lot of those individuals. And then we had a lot of individuals who were out of precinct because there's a big chunk of our voters that reappear every 4 years. For whatever reason, they don't vote in the midterm elections, which shame on you, but they vote every 4 years during the presidential. And so if you talk to someone, yeah, I voted at the Praisner or the Silver Spring Civic Building or the Potomac Community Center, which was an early voting site, not only in 2020, but in 2024. And then they wake up on the 5th, they crawl out of their cave and like, I'm going to vote today. And they show up at a former early voting center and they're out of precincts. And so now they have to vote a provisional when, for example, I voted in 2020 at the Praisner Community Center, but my Election Day polling place was Paint Branch High School up the road. If you're waiting for your mail-in ballot to get that notification as accepted, we're not Amazon. It's a very manual process. I invite the public to go to the canvas. Everything is on our website, 777vote.org. It's also live stream. So hopefully this will encourage you to make a vote plan for 2026.
There you go. Dr. Z, prepping you for 2026 elections already.
Yes. Yeah, we're already thinking ahead, my friend.
At a press conference on Monday, Maryland Election Administrator Jared DeMarinis was peppered with questions about bomb threats to 14 county election boards.
At first, you always try to think, well, is it just localized to the one county? You made sure that, we activated our, mitigation and response program that we have trained for this. This is, we had multiple tabletops prior to this about receiving threats and if whether it was disrupting of Election Day operations here. Luckily, it was afterwards. And by 8 o'clock, once we started to circle around and talk to the other local directors, we had ordered a full evacuation order. So at that point there, to make sure everyone was safe and secure. From 7:15 on, we were coordinating with our federal partners, local law enforcement, talking to the election directors. I was personally reaching out to election directors as well to make sure that they were fine and safe, because at that point there, we just don't know. MDEM was a fabulous partner with us on this front, and the governor's office as well, with the coordination of law enforcement for getting things swept. I can't confirm who's taking the actual lead, but we're committed to with ever resources and whatever they need from us to help with the investigation. It appears that they originated from overseas. It was sent by email.
We end with the curious case of non-citizen voting. First, it can happen legally. Local jurisdictions can allow non-citizens to vote in local elections, but they cannot allow this to happen for state and federal elections. Walter Olson is a libertarian scholar and political commentator who lives in Frederick County, and he did some social media sleuthing.
Shortly after Election Day, someone I know on Facebook shared a post that was done by a staffer with a conservative group in Washington, D.C., and it showed him in a Washington, D.C. polling station holding up a ballot and saying, look what just happened. I am not an American citizen. I am from Australia. I've only been here a few weeks. I marched in here. I showed them my DC residency, something that proved my DC residency, but did not at all prove that I was a citizen. And they handed me the ballot. And here I am, because I'm honest, because I don't want to make things worse. I did not cast the ballot, but I could have if I had wanted to. What kind of country do you have? You'd better support Donald Trump, or you're going to go on with insecure elections. To say that this is what people in many parts of the right were eager to hear is to understate. Of the hundreds of shares, I took the picture that he had posted of him holding up the ballot, and I blew it up on the screen to get a closer look at the ballot. Two things about the ballot jumped out at me. First thing I couldn't help noticing is that there was a large legend at the top saying local in capital letters. And the second thing was that I knew roughly how many races there were and ballot questions on the DC ballot. This was smaller. This had fewer lines than I expected a DC ballot to have. I knew that DC is among the relatively small number of cities around the country. There are several in Maryland as well, that allow non-citizens, so long as they are resident in the city, to vote in local elections. That's things like city council or school board. DC introduced this fairly recently. Every jurisdiction that does that has to make sure there are two voting streams, one for most of the voters and the other for these non-citizen voters who are not allowed to vote in federal elections. And so a separate ballot is printed, a local ballot, which is handed to them so they can vote only for the local races. And so I saw the local on that, and I thought, gee, that sure does look like what a local ballot would look like, isn't it? I left a message on his page saying what I just said, and then saying, while you were there, did you go to the manager of the polling station or to any of the workers and ask why you had been allowed to vote and seek an explanation? And if you did, what did they say? I have not heard back from that comment.
Walter Olson, thank you.
Thanks.
That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer Adama Gay, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band that straddles Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam Legrone on bass and synth, Ben Heath on guitar and synth, and Montgomery County's own James Hedrick on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and is now available on Bandcamp. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihbpod.org. See you next time.
A trophy left by a stray cat. I prick my finger on the sharp part and say the F word to and at myself and just throw it away. Evidence lacking any fingerprints. On the edge of the western desert, where are these old